My friend Stephanie Brown with the Southern Illinois Autism Society joining me this morning. April is Autism Awareness Month. First off, it's good to see you, kiddo.
It's good to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I'm going to be hard on you right off the bat.
That's okay. I expect nothing less.
The definition of autism, a mental condition present from early childhood, characterized by difficulty in communicating and forming relationships with other people and in using language and abstract concepts. All right, that's the definition. How does a mother of a young boy with autism define it?
I define it as a little boy who has problems communicating with me, letting me know what he needs, what he wants. Sometimes he's overwhelmed by just smells and sounds. But other than that, he's just a happy little six-year-old boy who loves to talk to your ear off about bass, crappie, catfish, and anything to do with dinosaurs.
Okay.
Excessively.
How old's your boy now?
He's six.
Yeah, six. See, this is another thing. I have always, for some reason, been drawn to this subject material, and I'm not sure why. I think I know. Because at a relatively young age, I was not told this by my parents until I was a great deal older, that they thought at school you were never going to be able to be in the general public, that you need to be put offside, you need to be put in a special class. My parents said, no, he's staying in class with everybody else.
Your parents were great advocates, just like I try to be for Mason.
Right. And so I've always felt a certain amount of kinship.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, it's the labeling saying you can't.
Absolutely.
But I realized that in this situation, you know what? And I look at this and I talk to parents, and boy, they worry about their kids. They worry about their kids, especially after they're gone.
Yeah.
That's one of the, I think I hear this probably more than anything.
Absolutely. I've decided that, number one, I have to now be invincible. I can't get sick, I can't die. I can't have a major emergency, because if I do, how will that affect my son? Will he regress? Will he? And, you know, we had actually a tragic loss in the autism community when Tim Beatty was
shot and killed,
being a hero. So that tragedy struck a nerve, not only because we knew Tim and know he's an excellent dad and for Jacob and Jessica, but it also woke a lot of us up. What will we do? What are we going to do? Because accidents happen every day.
Absolutely. Now, the treasurer has set up a program here, Michael Ferrets. I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it too much, but I hope to soon, where money can be put back, large sums of money,
mm-hmm.
and developing a plan to help parents plan financially for this. But see, you touched and you just kind of scraped across it. Autistic kids... If you're supposed to pick them up at school at 3:15, you bloody well need to be there. They have schedules, and much
routine.
Like myself, I have a schedule and a routine, and I stick with it. And it's vital to them because I almost got in the sense, Stephanie, that schedule disruption, their anchors are pulled away. They don't know what's going to happen. They're afraid of the what happens next. My schedule's gone.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, everybody. You have some type of routine that they're just used to taking place. Even if you go to work and someone's in your parking spot, the first thing that happens to you is like, why is this idiot in my spot?
It's going to ruin my whole day.
It's going to ruin your whole day. So for the next hour, you're really focused on, why did this person park in my spot?
Right.
So with kids with autism, how I try to explain it is, usually in the morning when they wake up, they have an empty sensory cup. Okay, so let's picture a coffee cup. Your cup is empty when you first wake up in the morning. So let's say you get up and your favorite shirt that you wanted to wear or that you had picked out, you spilled something on it, you add something to your cup. Your drive to work, drive to school, drive anywhere you have to
and
go.
And there's an ambulance behind you with sirens.
There's a traffic stop. You've got the light took a little bit longer.
More in the cup.
Yeah, more in the cup.
More
you
in
get
the cup.
To school. If you have an aide, your aide's sick.
More in the cup.
Or there's the teacher's gone. More in the cup. So by the time they get to school, their cup could already be 3/4 full. Then something else sets them off or doesn't happen the way it's supposed to go. And then the cup is full and they're in full sensory meltdown at this point, okay? A lot of people just treat the last thing that happened in that cup.
Right.
They don't realize all the things that have been going along. So it's important for kids with autism to have sensory breaks, and I call that dumping the cup. It's important to take time to dump that cup.
It's interesting that you mentioned this because there's been some new research that talks about overnight the purpose of sleeping is paring back synaptic relationships and things that happened the previous day so there's not so much noise.
Exactly.
That was the exact term they used in the article, noise in your brain, so that you remember the important things and forget. Because media and movies, I think, have depicted it kind of interesting, that you see through a young autistic child's eyes and you see colors and spirals and loud noises. I mean, I think it provides some type of insight, but still I think a great many of us are left bewildered. And one of the parts that I think scares me about this is that we know that young people have things happen to them and they don't want to talk about them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to talk about them
and the effect that has, because there's a soul in there that suffers, that loves, that cries, that wants food, that desires companionship. There's that soul in there, and I look at it as like being locked in a snow globe.
Well, yeah, and for a comparison, let's think about an adult, a typical developed adult. If you're having a bad day, or let's say you've had a tragic loss, you really don't want to talk about your feelings. You just want to keep it all to yourself. I'm fine. And keep moving. You give that standard response. I'm fine. Because you know that you have to take time for yourself to process what's happened or what's happening so you can get control of your emotions and then move forward on how you want to express communication with others. For an individual who cannot do that, who's having problems processing from the beginning and then has problems expressing it out loud, it's just that much overwhelmed. So the thing is we are going to put a video up on our Facebook page link, and it's a great video to kind of give a demonstration on what it would feel like to have autism. Because when we walk into buildings, usually, I'm a veteran, so sometimes I scan the room automatically, and now I'm autism mom, so I definitely scan.
Actually, all people scan the room, whether they're aware of it or not, because they create a 3D spatial map of the area in which they're working, and that's why when we walk into a new room, we forget what we walked in there for.
Yes.
Because your brain says, I don't even know that anymore. I'm getting ready for a new 3D environment, dump that, and that's why you forget things. So
yeah.
That's a very accurate analogy.
And you walk in, you got to take in the smells, the lights, the temperature, the noise.
And you and I have filters.
We do. And theirs are wide open. And it's heightened. For example, my son is sick. He's been running 102.7 temperature. If it was another child of mine, they would be able to tell me exactly what hurt, what was wrong with them, and the temperature wouldn't be such a big deal. But for Mason,
it's the only way you have to monitor, isn't it?
It is. And his body reacts to a slight change in temperature. So with this change in temperature with his body, his poor little teeth have just been chattering. Because if we go into a superstore or the mall or somewhere like that, we always have to bring a jacket, because just the slightest temperature change for him throws his body off a little bit.
Did not know that. Let me, on this did not know character,
mm-hmm.
All right? Because when you're planning for the future, money's one thing, but the way your son or daughter is treated, portrayed, and understood in the general public could very well change your concerns about their future. But we're still in a very steep learning curve, and more people are coming online with autism. I mean, I don't know about the new rates. Maybe we get a chance to talk about that. But when I first started looking at the Department of Education, before they took it down, 2,000% increase in one year.
Yeah.
And when I started looking about it, as I said, as soon as I started talking about it, they took that graph down. I couldn't go back to find it. Fortunately, I printed it out.
Yeah, me too.
And they said, well, it's because of our diagnostic abilities now. Okay, but still we see many, many kids born with autism. I mean, what's the last numbers you've seen? Have we seen any drop? Because, I mean, we don't know what to do to make it drop, so.
There's not a drop. It's 1 in 68, 1 in 45 for boys. And the thing is the CDC does not start counting those kids until they turn 8.
Really?
So, like, my son is 6, and I personally know his age range, I see it more and more frequent.
That bothers me a great deal, because I know about these outcomes, and I've seen some of them, too. Really surprising. If you get on it early, and we're talking 2, not 8.
Well, no, they want you to receive EI services as early as possible. But as far as the CDC tracking it to do the ratings, they don't count you until you're 8 years old.
Right.
So like my son's group hasn't even been counted in the diagnosis that's going around. So it'll wait until he can. 2 more years. So in 2 more years, I definitely think the numbers will change.
Stephanie Brown, Southern Illinois Autism Society, is joining us this morning. April is Autism Awareness Month, and here's another item. The state budget, its effect on the autism community and treatment possibilities for our young people in Southern Illinois. What has been the result? I know that we've been waiting one shoe after another has been dropping. What's the current state as you define it?
Well, we're all still a nervous wreck, just like most citizens here in Illinois. The thing is, especially with the change in the health care plan, if they change the health care plan, it's going to deeply affect those who not only have a pre-existing condition, but it deeply affects senior citizens and those who have disabilities. So those are our biggest
pre-existing
things.
Conditions.
Pre-existing conditions. We need to make sure the reform takes place, but it includes and protects those people.
All right. So if you're in the store and there's a young person having a problem, a difficulty because their cup is full, what would you want other parents, other kids, other family members who see this occurrence, what should they do? Not how they think. That's for another day. How do you behave? How would you like to see behave in public? Because I've seen a myriad of outcomes. And some of them are kind of embarrassing because they say, maybe he needs a good spanking.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you want to see?
I've had that happen to me personally, so I'll tell you exactly. And I've had it on the negative end, and I've had it on the positive end. Usually when my son, if I know that he's had a problem, I try to get through the store as quickly as possible, and I usually only go there if I absolutely have to have something. So I just, it's hard not to judge people, and everyone says, oh, I don't judge, but you do.
Everybody does. Anybody who says they don't, it's what we do. That's how we get from 1 minute to the next is making the call.
So if you see someone who's having a hard time or a difficult time in the store, try to let them go in front of you. That's a nice gesture. Would you like to go in front of me? Can I get this for you? Is there anything I can do for you? Do you need help out to your car? I mean, I won't mention the store, but a cashier at a certain store told me personally, if that was my son, I think I would make a trip to the bathroom.
Right.
So, you know what? I just went on. And your children, usually...
Because you've got to judge, too, and you say, that person doesn't know any better.
Yes,
water,
they don't.
Water
they
in
don't.
A duck's
water
back.
Water under the bridge. Yeah. And, especially with autism. Autism is an invisible disability. Unless you know that person has autism, or if it's very severe, you're not going to know.
No, you don't.
You don't. So I don't hold that accountable. And I really want people to ask questions. A lot of people these days don't ask questions because they're trying to be too politically correct. Come and ask the question, because you're never going to learn unless you ask. I don't care if it's an inappropriate question, because guess what? That's still a good question.
Because
the only bad question is that you're not asking.
Right.
Come and let us come. This, especially April, it's Autism Awareness Month. Come ask. Send us a Facebook message. If you want to be anonymous, send us an email. We'll reply back. But ask the questions, because no one's... You know what? I didn't know as much about autism until it became very personal for me. And now, like every other parent, we're our own research specialist.
Right. Because you're on the spectrum, and one person's advice may not apply to you.
Yes.
And that for... that.
Every child is
that's
different.
That's got to be an incredible challenge in learning. Learning because you don't have all that much data to work on. You don't have that communication that you spoke of earlier.
And if you've met one child with autism, you have definitely met one child with autism.
That's interesting.
Which also makes it so, and I never really appreciated that statement until it came to people asking me, well, what do you do for therapy for Mason? And what do you do for this for Mason? Because what works for mine is not going to work for everyone.
So everybody's coming through the funnel at their own rate.
Absolutely.
All the time. Now, one of the things that the Southern Illinois Autism Society does, a number of ongoing events, therapy, fundraising, help the kids interact, things along that line. I know you've got a color run coming up.
We do. Our color run is April 15th. It's our biggest fundraiser of the year. We love that one because...
What town's that in?
It's in Carbondale. It starts at the SIU track and field. We're fortunate that SIU donates the track and field for us every year to have the kids event. That's our biggest event because we do something. We provide scholarships for equine therapy. equine therapy is hands down one of the best hidden resources that Southern Illinois actually has to offer.
Well, where's that done?
At Giant City Stables.
Oh, yeah. I know Giant City Stables.
Yes, and we are so blessed to have that program here for us.
You got to have somebody down there to run and keep that program and to be able to handle the kids while they're coming in with the horses.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's a talent.
Oh, yes, and Ramona is fantastic.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
And I've been a part of actually hearing kids say their first word, and that, you know, these kids become my kids.
It's like Christmas morning for a parent.
It absolutely is. So the parents are like, did you hear that? I'm like, yeah, I did hear that. You know, or they bond with the horse. They smile while they're on the horse. So you get to see emotions that I'm tearing up just thinking about it.
That's all right. I smile when I'm on the back of a horse too.
You get to see them, that connection. So, and sometimes with autism, it's hard to see the connection.
And so you know what that connection represents, and you look forward to it because you want that connection to progress to you, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
What is it about horses? I've never gotten that. My Uncle Bill was a horse trader from way back, and he would get this because he was a horse guy. I'm a dog person, so I'm thinking dog therapy dogs. I've seen a lot of these horse therapy stories that have really remarkable stories.
They are really gentle giants, and it's almost like the horse knows. It's like they see into the kid's soul. I mean, that's really the best way I can explain it.
They pick up on something that I don't.
They pick up on something.
Well, as Bahasha Doan had always told me once before, you know, we're talking about dogs and what their currency is, that they're communications experts. We're just not very good at listening.
Yes.
And I think that's horses, too. You have to be in tune to a certain point. And we're city folk now. So.
Yeah. And so, I mean, if you guys ever want to see that, if you ever want to experience it, or even just come out and look to see what's going on out there and how we're making a difference, I encourage you to stop by Giant City, especially on a Saturday morning, or if you want to volunteer, they're always looking for volunteers, and watch, and you will see and you will get it, and it's like a magic moment. You're like, this is important, and this does work.
Stephanie, it's always good to have you in the studio.
Well, thanks for having me.
I know it's not always the best, easiest conversation, but I'm doing that thing you said about asking questions.
Yeah.
And I've done a pretty steady job of learning, and I still feel like I haven't done a good enough job yet. I think part of it is because I'm frustrated with this. I'm frustrated with the diagnosis, the growth rates, and of all the frustrations in the world of why. Because, see, to me, this is a scientific question. This is a question that has an answer, and we haven't found it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be a common denominator here. Why the big difference between male and female rates? That's one of the things I would think that would be a lead. I wish I was a doctor, a research doctor some days. But I think that's the thing of all of this entire conversation. I find that the singular frustrating point is we have not come any closer to why. Somebody right now said, but it's inoculations.
No. Our stance is that we do not believe that vaccines cause autism. And here's the thing that I tell everybody on a personal level, not just as a spokesperson for the Autism Society. As the Autism Society, we support a parent's right to choose. As Stephanie Brown, the mother of Mason Brown, I would like to tell you my personal opinion on vaccines, if that's okay. I cannot control autism. Mason is just, that was like the roll of the dice. He is 1 in 45 that got autism.
You had to come to that at your own rate. You
and I
you
did.
You didn't always believe this
no,
way.
No, I did
this
not.
This is the travel.
Yes, this is my growth. I can't control that he was the 1 in 45. What I can control is if he gets chicken pox, if he gets the mumps, if he gets the measles, or if he gets the whooping cough. I can control that because I can give him a vaccine to protect him from those things. If my son would become ill from a disease that I could have prevented from a vaccine, I would never forgive myself, ever. And guess what? I can't take that chance. With autism, I couldn't control that. He just happened to be 1 in 45. The only thing I control for that is to accept him, to love him, and to continue to advocate for him, build new programs, make it better, spread acceptance, educate communities around him, and do that. That's the only thing I can control. And with autism, it is an ongoing learning experience because, like I said, every child is different. There's new research that's coming out all the time. You just have to be very careful and make sure that it's research-based because there's a lot of crap out there, too.
Stephanie Brown, Southern Illinois Autism Society. It's always good to see you.
Good to see you too.